annual report and financials. We apologize for the late start. Apparently, I'm told these gadgets were put in 2004. And apparently, there are no spare parts anymore. So we will also raise the matter with the House Chair and the Speaker. I think we one committee, we're complaining so much, but if they'd agreed that to meet at the DST, we wouldn't be facing all these problems. So we would have been done the presentation by now. A quick introduction. My name is Lindwe Masego. I'm the chairperson of the committee.
Castle Matale, committee member.
Nokuzola Ndongene, committee member.
Chantal King, committee member.
Good morning. I'm Agnes Stack, committee member.
Good morning, Nick Kornhoff.
Good morning, Annelie Loprecht, member of the committee.
DJ, can introduce you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Philum Chwaga, the Director General of the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Imran Patel, DDG, responsible for Program 5, Socioeconomic Innovation Partnerships.
Morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Tommy Makode, DDG, responsible for Institutional Planning and Support.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Daniel Adams, I'm the Chief Director of the DST, but acting DDG for Research, Development and Support.
Good morning, everyone. Lisa De Toy, representing International Corporation and Resources.
Good morning. Christina Pinter, Chief Director for Innovation Priorities and Instruments, representing Program 2, Technology Innovation.
Good morning. Len Madiba, Monitoring and Evaluation.
Morning, I'm Andres Sheila. I'm a Director for Management Accounting. I'm also acting CFO.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. I'm Martin Mulcahy, Advisor to the Minister.
Thank you very much. DG, yesterday we had a presentation from the AG on the audit outcomes of the department. We have raised some issues, and I did mention to the committee also that after my meeting with them, I met with yourselves, and also take into account the annual report is for the past financial year, and that we had requested that you also address the issues that have been raised by the AG for the benefit of the meeting. And one other thing is that we also made a commitment to intensify also our oversight role, but also we've written a letter to the Speaker in relation to our this department. Or this committee in relation to other committees, because it's more technical and it's different. Also, our oversight is slightly different from ordinary committees. So, and we have another meeting with the AG so that we point out some of the issues that he highlighted, which we believe that they must not have a one-size-fits-all and a myopic assessment of all departments as if they all operate the same. But let's give you an opportunity so that you brief the committee on the annual report of the department. Thanks. Over to you, DG. Honourable Paulson, good morning. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chairperson. And my name is Nazir Paulson, and I'm a member of the committee. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Maybe let me
start with the issue that you've raised, and then we'll come back to it at the end. The Auditor General did give us their final outcome of the audit. I'll report on two parts, and then later on I'll ask Tommy Makode, who's DDG responsible for the audit of performance information or the performance of information, to share with the committee through your chair some of the steps that we are putting in place to try and address the concerns that were raised. The first one is that the auditors, the AG audits the financial aspect of the department. And for this financial year that we're reporting, 2016 and 2017, we got on that aspect of the audit a clean financial audit. There were a few outstanding issues on supply chain, and we are aware of those issues and that need to be tightened, but they did acknowledge a significant improvement in the way that we are managing the supply chain issues, especially the issue of irregular expenditure, where sometimes goods and services are procured and we go through, we don't go through the tender processes that need to be followed. So that's a positive aspect of the overall audit outcome. On the performance information, the Auditor General this time did two things. One, they did not just take a sample of the information in the programs that they had selected, 2, 4, and 5, but they did an audit on all of the areas or the indicators that we had presented to them. And there were findings in programs 2, which were subsequently, I think, clarified, and Tommy can speak to the details on the audit of performance information. And then there were findings in program 5, which ended up with the finding that the Auditor General, I think, reported on the annual report. On the two targets, which we had indicated the achievements, but when the Auditor General looked at the sample and looked at the information, they could not verify the numbers that we had presented. And we have subsequently accepted, I think, the finding of the Auditor General, and we have subsequently put in place measures, both internally within the department, but in partnership with the entities that help us to implement some of these programs to ensure that we have this reliable information, and we will be auditing this information not only at the end of the year, we'll be auditing this information throughout the year. So that's the first intervention. The second one is we have agreed that the internal audit will have an audit coverage plan that also helps us to give us an early warning on this reliability of the performance information and the accuracy of the information, and therefore we will be receiving an internal audit analysis of whether the information is reliable as we monitor on a quarter-to-quarter basis. And then the third intervention that we have made is we have agreed that roles must be clarified. If there are individuals or chief directors or directors that are managing the contract or the interface between the department and the implementing agency, it is his or her responsibility to make sure that the adequate information is available and is tracked right through the year. And we have asked the individuals who are going to manage this information to sign letters accepting this responsibility, and the Deputy Directors General to ensure that there is a tighter oversight of this information. So I just thought I would mention that up front, Honorable Chair, but later on when the members would like to know more about this, I'll hand over to Tommy during the question and answer session. So with your permission then, as usual, we will go through the purpose, vision, mission, alignment to national priorities, and then we'll give some highlights and then how we've performed then. vision, again, the honorable members are aware now of our vision of increased well-being and prosperity through science, technology, and innovation, and the mission providing leadership, enabling environment and resources for science, technology, and innovation in support of South Africa's development. We are aligned to the outcomes of the government as expressed in the medium-term strategic framework. We support outcome 2 that looks at the long and healthy life for all South Africans, outcome 4, the decent employment through inclusive economic growth, outcome 5, skills and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path, outcome 6 on the infrastructure, outcome 7 on rural development, and outcome 10 on environmental assets and natural resource management. Overall, we achieved 55 of the 62 targets, and 11 of the targets were not achieved, and we will give some explanation at the end of the targets that were not achieved. This is just a comparison from year to year of the performance of the department on these predetermined objectives. And just some highlights on the strategic-oriented outcome goals. The first one on the responsive, coordinated, and efficient national system of innovation. The committee would know that during this period, the minister had asked the National Advisory Council on Innovation to review the 1996 white paper on science and technology, and this has been submitted to the minister. It is informing the second bullet point, the draft white paper, which we are revising for the last stage now. It's already been presented to the economic sectors and employment and infrastructure development cluster, and NECI has also been commissioned to produce a framework for the decade plan. Minister also appointed a team to review the status of the science, technology, and innovation institutional landscape, briefly called STEEL, and the final report has been submitted to the minister, and the minister has asked that further additional work be done on this, and we are busy drafting the terms of reference for the finalization of this institutional landscape. We had reported before that Cabinet had approved that the Department of Science and Technology and National Treasury introduce a research and development budget coordination process in order to have a single line of sight of the funding that goes to the science councils, and having a way of ensuring that the money allocated to the science councils continues to do research and development for the science councils in the line ministries that do not report to the Minister of Science and Technology. On the knowledge generation increases, DST, together with the NRF, has continued to provide research support to researchers, awarding just over 4,000 research grants to researchers. We are also happy that the program, which was started about 2 years ago on how to integrate the cyber infrastructure system, has been implemented since 2016. The National Integrated Cyber Infrastructure System integrates high-performance computing, which is based in Cape Town, the SANREN, which is the backbone for transmitting data and information between institutions, SANREN, and the Data Intensive Research Initiative of South Africa. So during this period, we are happy to report that we provided funding in the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, helping the upgrading of the Center for High Performance Computing capability to 1 petaflop, and the contracts for the implementation of the National eScience Postgraduate Teaching and Training Platform in the Western Cape Data Intensive Research Information System for South Africa Tier 2 data has been signed. In other words, we now have a training platform that involves a number of universities to train eScience postgraduate students. We've just provided here a sense of what do these tier mean. Tier 1 refers to the national infrastructure. tier two research to the regional infrastructure, and tier three is what happens at the institution. So this DERISA tier two data intensive research facility is the one that is run here in the Western Cape. On the Meerkat, we are happy to report that 62 pedestals were installed and 58 dishes were lifted. We tried to get an update information this morning, and I'm told that 60 of the dishes have already been lifted, so we just left with about four. Hopefully those would be done between now and the end of the year. And then, of course, at the time of reporting, the Meerkat first light image of the radio sky was produced, showing that more than 1,300 radio galaxies in the distant universe were seen by at least the 16 dishes that were finalized at the time. So we hope that we'll get and see even more with the 64 dish array. And also in the research equipment infrastructure, the committee, through you, Honorable Chair, would be aware that in October, early in October, the dish which was converted from being a dish for communication into a radio astronomy dish as part of the African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Network was finished in Ghana. Refurbishment of the dish was done, and the first light image was also seen as a sign of readiness to collect the data, and we're showing the pictures of the president of Ghana in Kudunze at the launch of this initiative of this dish, which would be part of the global network of radio astronomy. The initiative, of course, was funded through the African Renaissance Fund of the Department of International Relations. We are currently developing a proposal for the refurbishment of dishes in other parts, in Zambia, in Namibia, will be a new build, refurbished dish in Madagascar, and then a refurbished dish in Mozambique. On human capital development, again, we are happy with the number of research grants that were awarded, and that 35% of these were to the black researchers and 38% to women. It's not the number we're looking for, but we are happy with the indication that there is a significant number of black researchers and women researchers who are also benefiting from the research grants. But we are working with the NRF to increase these numbers to represent the demographics of the country. We are also grateful to the South Africa UK bilateral chairs, and three of these research chairs were awarded to universities of Nelson Mandela, Witwatersrand, in the Western Cape. And these UK-South Africa bilateral chairs are very, very useful in not only making sure that the UK and South African researchers work together, but they also have a condition of bringing at least a researcher or an institution from the rest of the continent. So we are grateful to this partnership that we have with the UK government. And the data science for impact and decision enablement had a student uptake of about 51 in 2017. And as we indicated, these students get exposure to the ever-changing field of data science through placement in mentor-guided and learn by doing problem-solving of real-world needs. So we hope that we'll be able to have these data scientists that are needed in today's and modern economy of being able to use data analytics, not only in government but in the private sector as well. On the human capital development, I think we did report in the last quarter that the minister and myself and some deputy directors general, we visited historically disadvantaged institutions last year, September, October, to try and get a first-hand sense of the challenges that these institutions are facing. And we had already made high-level proposals coming out of the visit, and these include that the DST to liaise with the DHET on the deployment of the new generation of academics program, the NGAP, to historically disadvantaged higher education institutions. We had seen that in some of these institutions, there are institutions that have position themselves to focus on research and probably need to be supported. So this is the idea of this NGAP program that will be dedicated to take advantage and to tap into this resource that the country has in order to expand our research capability. We are also going to engage with the National Research Foundation on perhaps looking at reintroducing institutional research capacity that they used to have before, that was trying to work with the higher education institutions previously disadvantaged to develop this institutional research capacity. And then, of course, a development program for historically aligned with the DHET differentiation framework for HEIs, because I think there is an emerging discussion with the DHET that is in the public domain, accepting that maybe not all universities will be research-intensive universities, and therefore how do we align ourselves with the proposal from DHET that differentiate these universities and make sure that we have adequate support for the historically disadvantaged institutions that have ambition to move in this direction. On the bursaries front, just over 3,000 students were awarded PhD degrees and 10,268 pipeline postgraduate, that is, honors and master's students. And then we're also happy to say that we were celebrating the 10th anniversary of the HCD-SKA program, where 730 university academic postdoctoral researchers, postgraduate and undergraduate students were supported. In addition, 133 students from the rest of the Africa continent have been part of this program. And some have gone back to their countries to start astronomy-related activities, and we are grateful about this support. And then the DST NRF internship program has seen a total of just over 1,000 graduate and students that were placed in DST-funded work preparation programs. Over 8,000 research articles were published, and a total of over 2 million participants were reached through the science awareness and engagement programs. On using knowledge for economic development, we are going to report on a program which we started about 2.5 years ago that is beginning to bear fruit. This is a program to encourage industry innovation partnership with some specific industries, and we are happy to report that at the CSIR, under nanomaterials, there is an industrial development facility which has been initiated. And this partnership has seen 6 industry partnerships established with the private sector. And then, of course, for them to do that, there has been a need to scale up nano-based innovations to industrial and commercial scale. So there's a whole facility at the CSIR that is being developed in order to attract partnership with the industry. Also in the area of using light for communication, it's an emerging area. And also light for bio solutions. We have been working with the CSIR to develop this photonics prototyping facility, and there's been a promising pipeline with applications in healthcare, defense, security, and communications that have been developed between the CSIR and some industry. We have reported on the Biomanufacturing Industry Development Center chairperson. Just to remind the colleagues, the honorable members, that we continue to support this initiative. And some work that we have done, which we had not highlighted to the portfolio committee, and we thought today maybe we should highlight, is this program called Helio 100. It's a 100% South African developed technology, which is a technology that uses concentrated solar power to produce energy. What you see at the bottom of the picture on the left-hand side is a series of mirrors that take the sun rays and concentrate them on the tower that you see at the back. And then at the tower you have a liquid which is heated by the energy that these mirrors are focusing from the sun. And then when that liquid is heated to a temperature that is high enough, it's then converted into steam, and then that steam is used to generate electricity. This is a program that has been, in the last couple of years, being developed at the University of Stellenbosch, and they are now in the process of trying to commercialize this. And this technology has a huge potential of providing power and, if we may say, clean power in areas that are not connected into the grid. The progress has been a bit slow, but we will be working with the Technology Innovation Agency as well as the Industrial Development Corporation to provide the necessary funding for these locally developed technologies to be taken up in South Africa, but also for export, because there have been a number of international countries and partners that have expressed huge interest in this, because generally the concentrated solar power tends to be a big facility that is like a utility ESCOM kind of facility, and yet this one is small and it's able to be developed rather quickly. The second program that we hadn't really shared with the honorable members, but maybe we did, and we have since not brought it into the radar screen, is a program that is currently being developed at the Nelson Mandela University. It's called Colgi. So in other words, you take dusts of coal and then you use algae to extract biofuels from this dust of coal. And this program is a mixture then of coal dust and algae biomass that they grow. And what you see on the picture on the left is therefore the algae that is being grown together with some dust particles. Mm-hmm. And what you see here is the amount then of colgi charcoal that comes out of this. And then, of course, as I've said, when this is crushed, it's able to produce biofuel. It's at the level of, of course, they've had a trademark granted. And then also ESCOM Research Testing and Development Unit has finalized the independent test of the colgi, so there will be a partnership with this, and we are trying to get this one as well to full commercialization. The third one that we want to share with the honorable members is the AeroSwift industrialization and commercialization. A milestone was reached in December with the manufacturing of the first real component out of this AeroSwift, which is rapid prototyping at the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. We are in the process of trying to working with AeroSuit in Centurion to get to the commercialization of this technology of using lasers and powder to produce parts, call it net shape production of parts. So we've been able to demonstrate that parts can be produced, but we are also in the process of looking at the machine itself that is doing this printing of these three parts to be commercialized. So it's two products that will come out of this work in the with the price of one, if you may say so. And then we also in partnership with the Agricultural Research Council, University of Venda, and the Limpopo Department of Agriculture funded the development of new commodity-based agro-processing facilities based on indigenous crops at Makonde Village in Toya Ndo. And then the wheat breeding program was established and funded. It is developed in partnership with Grain SA and co-funded with Winter Cereal Trust. And it's about supporting the local cultivation of wheat, the bulk of which at the moment is imported. So hopefully we will impact on the balance of payment. And then the DST-funded soybean improvement program, which focuses on the development of appropriate technologies on the increased palatability of soybean as an alternative food source, and the direct outputs at development training of entry-level soybean entrepreneurs. And then on the using knowledge for inclusive development, the Strategic Health Innovation Partnership Program of the Department of Health, of ourselves, executed by the Medical Research Council, have been able to build on the work that was funded from previous years, and the program led to the development of an additional anti-malaria candidate with the potential for both treating and preventing malaria. The discovery has the potential to block transmission of the parasite from person to person and could therefore contribute to the eradication of malaria. The next phase of the project is include validation studies in humans, since the studies at the moment has been done on mainly animals. Another groundbreaking initiative is the one which is called Multi-African States Foot and Mouth Disease Rapid Response, and then the program focuses on livestock diseases management through the development of diagnostics and technologies that will support and inform policies to assist in managing notifiable diseases such as the foot-mouth disease. On strategic outcome goal number 5, decision support through innovation technologies in support of municipalities, the portfolio committee and the members would be familiar about the Bioenergy Atlas, which was launched last year, which is a web-based decision-making support tool that is targeting both energy policymakers and potential investors in the energy sector around areas where biomass could be used for the development of energy from biomass. And then we are also happy to report that the ICT-RDI program has started to look at how we can expand the mobile laboratory initiative that has been running mainly in Gauteng and the Western Cape to expand to provinces of Limpopo, Northern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. The initiative at Gauteng and Western Cape began a startup incubator for mobile application developers, including coding skills academies, lean innovation, and co-creation programs for students and industry. So we're very happy that there are some emerging mobile applications that are targeted at transport, health, education, tourism, and gaming out of this initiative. And hopefully its expansion to the other provinces would make sure that we are better able to use mobile apps for the solutions in these areas that have been shown. So then the program performance will be highlighted, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Again, this is just the 5 programs of the TST. This just shows the different programs and how they have achieved from Program 1 all the way up to Program 5. And this just shows the achievements in Program 1 on the alignment of our planning documents, alignment of DST strategic priorities with the entities of the APPs, and the DST public entity strategic and annual performance plans approved by the minister. The assessment reports that were aligned and analyzed and feedback provided by the 28th that was done, quarterly performance reports approved by EXCO and signed by ourselves, by myself in 60 days, an annual performance report approved by EXCO and signed, that was all achieved. On Program 2, we're happy to report that out of the 25 instruments funded in support of knowledge utilization that was done, the knowledge products generated by 31st of March we've overachieved, and evaluation and assessment reports approved that was done. On the regulatory recommendations for decision support, this is mainly the decision support that we provide, for instance, to the Department of Agriculture on the introduction of GMOs and regulatory environments around this. This is what it means. Decision support interventions, we've shown some example, and then the technology development and innovation policy directives developed and adopted by government, that was achieved. On international cooperation and resources, on the funding or international funds directly invested in research, innovation, and science technology and innovation human capital development programs, we exceeded the target. The amount invested by international partners in their own organizations and initiatives, but targeted at cooperation in research and innovation with ourselves, almost over R1 billion was invested, so that was achieved. The South African students that are participating in international training programs, 210, that was achieved. international partner organizations collaborating with South African partners, 668 again overachieved. Research innovation cooperation projects co-funded or supported in kind by the DST and at least other African government, again 54 out of 30. And then the million, 388 million in international funds directly invested in African regional and continental research and innovation, science and technology, human capital development, or research infrastructure programs achieved. In program four, a number of PhD students, we had already reported on this, graduates and students placed 962, 72 research infrastructure grants awarded, the megabits per second average bandwidth available per Sundance site, again achieved, research articles published, achieved, report on existing climate change research, it's an internal indicator, and then the first biennial report on the state of climate change, science and technology in South Africa was approved and actually tabled in cabinet, that was achieved. And program five, knowledge products, completed and published on the website, decision support system maintained, learning interventions that are generated, all achieved. The number of students that are funded under the programs, we are grateful that we actually doubled the number, knowledge and innovation products, four out of four were achieved. Masters students supported, and the number of interns that are funded or co-funded in programs that are run by these programs also achieved. So the targets that were not achieved, as we've indicated before, it's either the process delays, and then ineffectiveness sometimes of the agencies or the implementers that we work with, and then sometimes it's learning on how better we can formulate the target. So on the 90 days to fill vacancy after advertisement, the implementation of the public service wage bill containment measures meant that we were not able to achieve this because we've had to put the filling of posts on hold. And then again, same thing with the vacancy rate. We could not achieve the 6% because we had not we didn't have to employ anybody new. On the disclosures, we did not meet the target, and I think at the last quarter we already highlighted the challenges that I think process delays, what constituted disclosure, as well as some of the challenges in the universities have made that there's been a little bit of under reporting. On the pipeline of postgraduate students, mainly masters and PhD, as you can see, to say 10,996 is rather difficult to achieve to exactly the number. So we are working with the NRF, but also with the Auditor General, as to whether we can not formulate this in a different way, where perhaps we would have, say, 10,000, and then we'll have an upper limit and a lower limit, because it's sometimes difficult to specify this to the last third digit. The same goes for the researchers that are awarded. As you can see, 4,539 against 4,520. So we will continue to work with both the NRF and the AG on this. On the business innovation survey, the commencement of the survey field work was postponed because we had to finalize the methodology and documents and sampling with the Human Sciences Research Council. And then on the pre-approval, at the report of the last quarter chair, we had indicated that we will come and present to the committee, I think mid-October, the detailed progress that we have made on the pre-approval of the decisions provided within 120 days. We'll give the portfolio committee where we are with the backlogs. We'll provide with the committee where we are for this year's application, and there's been a significant improvement both in addressing the backlog so that we can get to the 120-day turnaround time that we set up. But at this point in time, or at the time of reporting, we were not there yet. And then on the financial performance and conclusion, this is just the split of the budget of the department per programs, and again indicating that 92% of our budget goes to the entities, and then indicating that we actually spend 99.4% of the budget was spent. This is again just showing per each of the program of the DST, and then the year-on-year comparison of the expenditure against the budget. So in conclusion, we recognize that if South Africa's economy is to advance along the trajectory set out in the NDP, we still need to make sure that we have an effective and a coherent national system of innovation, but we hope that the initiatives that we have in place are going to get us there. The DST continue to encourage and strengthen industry innovation partnerships. We've shown the BIDC, the Nano, as well as the prototyping and other initiatives in the ICT domain. Sustainable growth in South Africa will require transformed and fully utilized human capital base, and we are trying to work with the NRF to make sure that historically disadvantaged institutions, black researchers and women researchers are supported, and the department is committed to maintaining high standard of corporate governance. As we have indicated in the beginning, that we are happy that on the financial side we got a clean audit. We are deeply worried and concerned that we didn't get as clean an audit on the audit of performance information, but hopefully as we put the new measures to address this, things will get better. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, TG, for that in-depth presentation. Let me open to honourable members for your questions or comments on the presentation. Honourable Matale. Honourable King, in that order.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks, DG. The preamble of the Chair and the preamble of the DG didn't necessarily put us on the back foot, but it was good that you clarified the issues that the AG raised with us, and because we in the presentation it was the AG was comfortable with the general leadership that is being presented by yourselves, which is good, but there was concern about the response by senior management on some of the issues raised, and yeah, in your response you were saying that I don't know whether you are signing contracts or what, but you are making commitments with senior management, those who will be responsible for specific outcomes that they will commit to make follow-ups on that, and if you know people don't do what they are supposed to do, you will definitely be having measures to deal with. There will be consequences. Let's put it that way. So it was quite encouraging that you spoke to that, and you know you made it difficult. What are we going to ask if you have answered? Unless if we just want you to just talk, but it's good that you know the department is responding the way, the manner in which you are doing. The question that I have might not necessarily, but it is related to this, because we are saying that for us to build our economy, science and technology must be at the center. I was reading some information regarding the future coin, which they call it Bitcoin, and that you know, for you to participate in the economies at that scale, you need to own the platform. We have established high computing facilities here in Cape Town. To what extent are we gearing ourselves to be players as far as this platform is concerned? Because I think if if as a country we position ourselves properly, we can become the platform for the continent. Because you know this new development suggests that if we properly position ourselves, we can become for Africa to transact, they will have to use our platform, and if they use our platform, they will have to pay for that. We'll sort of be a bank of some kind. Are we looking at something like that? Yeah, I think, you know, if we had a comment along those lines, that's why I say in terms of a question, really, it's a bit, from my side, I found it a bit, you know, not necessarily disorganized, but I'm happy that, you know, you preempted that, because what is key is for the department to correct, you know, the issues that are raised, so that when you come to this level, we shouldn't say, no, but there is this thing, why didn't you respond to it? So we must commend you and the team for being proactive. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matel, Honourable King, and then Honourable Dr. Lottery.
Thank you once again for the presentation. It was well put out. And also I have to say thanks for preempting what most of us were concerned about. My issue is that yesterday when we spoke to the Auditor General, he was very concerned with your IT control systems. And it looks actually very bad when you consider we are science and technology and innovation. That should not have been an issue. Have that been sorted? And he was also concerned about the slow response of management to address the Auditor General's findings. If you sit down and discuss your action plan in full, I know you said you were talking about it, but has there actually been steps put in place and timelines when all of this will then actually take place? I'm glad to see irregular expenditure has actually decreased because I am very much concerned about that. Then on your presentation, page 14. I'm a bit concerned when you say that it's difficult or you still have an issue to commercialize certain products after incubation, and this will keep technology at the back foot. Has there any consideration been given to have a one-stop shop to deal with all these issues? Instead of people having the idea and then have to run around, and then by the time they get to get, it would be nothing. Also on page 30 and 35, on page 30, I would just want to find out, the biannual report was given to Cabinet, they've approved it. When will we see it as the committee and have robust discussions on it? Page 35, your one concern was commencement of a survey of fieldwork postponed. How far are you with that situation? I think by now we should have had a clear response. Financially, I don't have an issue. It's not that much a concern.
Thank you. Dr. Lutrit. Thank you, Honorable King.
Thank you, Chair. I just think Honorable Matale's question also just sparked something in me. Also, not just in terms of Bitcoin, which is one of many, many cryptocurrencies, but the whole issue of blockchain technology, as this is very much part of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and is the department looking at anything in that direction?
Honorable Goranov.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on, you know, if we eventually achieve our targets in terms of master degrees and doctorates, you know, we should recognize that all of those who are with PhDs cannot end up in the academic world. They should, you know, grow into the normal society.
do we have proper plans to make sure that that is happening and that we don't create expectations that everyone with a PhD wants to be a professor at the end of the day, and then we don't, you know, we waste that energy and time of an individual if he cannot end up, you know, being employed at an academic institution. And then secondly, I was fortunate to be in Poland on a private visit. I just want to know, apart from SCAR, I think there is an interest between Poland, or there is an not an investment, they're part of the partnership in terms of SCAR, SKA, but do we have any other projects going with Poland? It's an interesting economy, you know. We all know what happened to them after the war. But they've rebuilt that country in such a way that they're now the fastest growing economy in Europe, just overtaken Germany, now from a low base. But the point is, there's lots of similarities in terms of science and technology, what they are doing with their population, and also with regard to, you know, what they have done correctly to where they are today.
Thank you very much, Honorable Koronov. Your last comment yesterday, I was listening to some economists talking about that Zimbabwe is where the Eastern Bloc was, you know, just after the war. And today they've surpassed, the like you say, Germany and stuff like that. So it says if you have money, start investing in Zimbabwe and for better returns, because they are where exactly the Eastern Bloc was at that time. Okay, let me give Honorable Paulson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, DG, for your presentation. DG, there's on slide 28, you mentioned that there's this wonderful development at the University of Stellenbosch, and where they are in need of funding for potential commercial partners now, since electrification is such an important, or actually the responsibility of the government. Why are we not investing in developing that industry, especially for areas that are remote and not possible to connect to the grid? And then on page 57, or slide 57, the figures, they are impressive, but, you know, typically I would want to know the breakdown of those figures, like in terms of gender, and also how they meet with the other challenges of showing improvement in the number of people from, shall I say, different races, being able to do the PhD or postgraduate studies. And then also, we spoke about this last time in terms of having a way of measuring the impact that this research has in building industries and creating employment, since this is one of the mandates and or your vision or the mission of the department. So how far are we in determining what that impact is, or having an instrument to measure that impact? Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Honorable King. Thank you, Honorable Paulson.
I just have to ask, would your irregular expenditure of 176,000 million, I think, I need to find out actually what consequence management procedures that you put in place for the people actually incurred. I know some might not be actual money. I'm quite aware most of the time it's not that. But I need to know, accountability should be there, which measures that you put in place.
Like missing flights. Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable King. Yeah, I think I'm covered by honourable members. There was something that was raised by Honourable King on the one-stop shop from incubation to commercialization, because I think it's still a concern. When we went to the expo the Innovation Bridge, you saw all these stalls, and we were interested with Shana's in one where they're showing how to save water and using rainwater, you know, for sanitation instead of a clean water. This person was funded by TIA, and now he's stuck. And it's a, for me, I just saw it as, you know, like if you, for the project of the RDP houses, you can just install that from the beginning, and then it's able to save rainwater, and then, you know, put it through to in that circular thing. But they cannot afford the pipes. Nobody is prepared to help them. They're just desperate, you know. So TIA has done and ticked its box. They've done what they're supposed to do, which is commendable. And same as what we saw when we're at CSIR, you know, those incubation. I'm not sure about, we had sometime made a proposal of engagement between the DG and the minister and ourselves to engage with the small business and trading industry to have that value chain and ensure that from the beginning to the end, the client or the incubatee is benefiting, and not just a silo thing that you've done this, and then from there you'll see how you go around. Yeah. Okay. DG and your team.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the questions. Let me maybe alert the individuals who can support with some of the questions. The Bitcoin and platform, the blockchain, maybe I'll ask Imran to talk about that, Honorable Matal and Honorable Odrid, but probably also broadly about what we are doing in the department about the next industrial revolution or the fourth industrial revolution, because I think these fit, I think, in that bigger discussion, and we have some thoughts around this and what we're doing, and we'll share that with the colleagues. And then, Honorable King, on the IT control systems, we've started to do two things. One is we've put a steering committee that looks at all of the problems that we have, both on the governance side, but also on the issues, and in particular, around the issues of making sure that we are able, if anything goes wrong, to have sites outside the DST that would be able to make sure that when you run out of IT systems in the department, the data is stored outside. And when your emails are not working, you are able to get the department to work without. What we've done is we've now, I think, strengthened the steering committee, and they are looking at all the governance issues. We've also been testing, I think, these remote sites, and we've agreed that once every year or twice a year, we will have the internal audit with an external company switching off, you know, the main server in the department, and sort of so that we who are working on our computers don't even know that the back end is coming from this data. So we'll be able to now, we think, get a better sense of these internal. And then, of course, I think we've just bought a software that is going to help us with also the people who leave the department but who still have active, if you like, access to the system. We've been able to deal with all of those internal issues, and then we have a firewall internally that helps us to track the intrusions that have been attempted and whether we've been successful. So we'd be more than happy, maybe at an appropriate time, if the chair allows, to come and share with you some of these activities and you know, what we've tested to make sure that not only they appear on paper, but they do work in the real environment. Yes, on the issue of the slow responses to management and responding to both Honorable King and Honorable Matale, We've asked the DDGs to sign the letters of commitment that this year we will not have the same problem as last year. And the letters have also been signed by the chief director or a director who is responsible for the contract to make sure that the data is there, they've tracked the data. So we hope that this, because the slow response was because sometimes people just didn't know where the information was. So we are now putting together proper filing system, tracking system, and make sure that when the auditors need the information, either electronically or through a file that the person knows where the information is, we are able to do this. So hopefully it will address the issue of slow responses. I will ask Andres to talk about the amount on the irregular expenditure. I don't remember, Honorable King. But if we can't answer it today, we're happy to send you in writing. But we do follow up on who is responsible, and if it's somebody at the supply chain who has not followed up, he's or she's asked to write and explain why that's the case, and then we assess whether that is a reasonable explanation or not. If it's not, a warning is given to the individual. So we have a mechanism of consequence management around this, but we can follow up on this one in particular. And then the issue of commercialization. At the moment, as you know, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we've done maybe three things. We had raised this in Cabinet, and we were asked to set up or to start the process of setting up something called a Sovereign Innovation Fund. This is a fund which is supposed to be administered by DST, EDD, as well as small business, with the understanding that there are institutions that already are overseen by EDD, like the IDC, that are well positioned to take some of these ideas to the market, and that sometimes the small enterprise development agency is well equipped to take some of these innovations, like the one that the chair was talking about, into the commercial space. We have propose the harmonization of these instruments in the new white paper that we're writing. Whether it will end up being a one-stop shop, Honorable King, we don't know whether that would be agreed. Departments tend to want to have their own things, but hopefully the Sovereign Innovation Fund will go a long way towards addressing the funding aspect. But the second aspect is about the country being willing to take up these local innovations, and sometimes we think that that's probably the biggest mindset challenge, because we are happy to go and buy something across the borders, but we sometimes aren't willing to buy the things that are coming from. And I'll ask Imran to talk about strategies for locally developed technologies to be taken up by government first, and then of course the private sector and others. So those are the two sort of strategies that we are pursuing at the moment. And then on the biennial report, yes, it's been approved by Cabinet. We'd be more than happy, Denny, working with the chairperson to find a slot where we can share the report of this biennial. And then on the business innovation survey and the delays, I'll ask Imran to speak about that. And then Honorable Lotrit, Imran will also talk about the broader fourth industrial revolution. Honorable Goranov, difficult question, but a relevant one around where this PhD is going to go to. The thinking from the department and the minister has asked us to start thinking about this institutional landscape. The institutions that we have, are they adequate to absorb the numbers that we're looking for? But also, we are not so sure how many of these PhDs are absorbed by the private sector, because in other parts of the world, you absorb maybe a third back into your academia, and the two-thirds actually should go out into the industry, as well as others setting up their own businesses. As a start, what we have done is, working with the National Research Foundation, is we have asked a service provider, I think Cresti and Stellenbosch, to work with the NRF to track where are the PhDs that we train at the moment, because that baseline we think will help us to get a sense of where people get absorbed and perhaps other fields where most of these PhDs are absorbed. And then once we know that, we can then begin perhaps as we want to continue to deepen the engagement with the private sector to see whether these industry innovation partnerships would be a vehicle as well for the students to be absorbed. The other study that I think would be useful in understanding at least the problem is the technology and human resources industry partnership that is administered by the Department of Trade and Industry, which is a program of the DTI but executed by the NRF until last year. Because that program was also designed to make sure that the human resources that are being trained at the universities, because these programs are university industry partnerships, then those PhD and master's students naturally end up in industry. I do know that the impact of that program 10 years ago was done by DPME last year. So what we could do, again, if the portfolio committee is keen, is once the study that I'm referring to has been completed that the NRF and CREST are doing, we can present that to the portfolio committee together with the evaluation of the technology and human resource industry partnership, the three program, that was the evaluation that was done by DPE, and whether those are adequate and they are going to help us. And then, of course, the third issue is the work that the minister has directed us on how to expand the science, technology, and innovation enterprise, because if we don't expand it, we will end up with exactly the problem that Honorable Goranoff is identifying of having these PhDs that you produce, but they're not absorbed anyway. So again, this is something that we'll be more than happy at an appropriate time to come and give a full sense of the work that we are currently doing at this point in time. On the Poland, I'm going to ask Lisa Dutoit from ICR if there's anything we're doing with Poland. I do know that they are also very strong partners in the Southern African Large Telescope, the SALT Telescope in Sutherland. But beyond that, I don't have any information that comes to mind immediately. But Lisa can add. And then, yes, we are very worried, Honorable Paulson, on the Helio 100. In fact, deeply worried because, in fact, Stellenbosch shared with us that there's a huge interest from a country on the east that would like actually to buy this technology from South Africa. So we would like to work with Stellenbosch to make sure that the funding is made available so the technology is kept in South Africa to address, as you say, the problems that it's likely to address of making sure that we've got the electricity in areas that ideally we wouldn't. So we will be, in the light of all of these challenges that we have in the commercialization, engage with Stellenbosch, and maybe in the next third quarter or fourth quarter we'll probably come with a concrete proposal. And the breakdown, Danny, I'm not so sure, are we able to break down the figures of the students' gender race? If we can't do it today, Honorable Paulson, we can provide that information through the chair. But what we have done, as you probably know, is that the minister has developed guidelines on the funding for students, postgraduate students at the NRF, that helps to assist in us achieving the racial and gender balance. So we would be more than happy to share the details of that framework and how it's probably over time helping us to really get the... but I think in terms of getting the racial breakdown, I think it's possible, but we'll just double-check that with the program together with the National Research Foundation. And the answer to your last question is I'm glad that the chair of the... of the National Advisory Council on Innovation has walked into the room, as well as the CEO. This is the work that we are doing jointly with them. But at this point in time, the answer is we don't have a mechanism of tracking. We're doing this through case studies and just estimating, you know, the impact of people who go and work with PhDs in industry and academia, but I don't think there's a formal framework, nor in my last understanding of policy developments elsewhere in the world, I don't think that either in the OECD or
other policy units globally have developed a framework. There is always some anecdotal evidence that there is interaction, but I'm not so sure if I could request Dr. Cele if he knows anything in terms of the broader policy evolution globally, whether this is being done, if the chair would allow. But I would like then for now just to ask Mr. Patel to respond. I'm not so sure Denny would be able to speak to the breakdown, and then Ms. Dutoit to talk about anything Honorable Korenov on the Poland partnership. Thanks.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Honorable Members, for the questions. I think they are the kind of issues we're grappling with. Just quickly around some of the areas, Bitcoin, blockchain, fourth industrial revolution, this is something that all players in society, government departments, industry, etc., are having to grapple with. Specifically around Bitcoin, I think the area is the tech, the impact around the technology, and we're doing some work, but the lead, I know of some work being done by the banking regulators, an example, to look at Bitcoin technology and whether to accept it. I read recently that China, in fact, was very bullish on Bitcoin, have now reversed. So this is a field that is changing quite a bit, and a lot of people are trying to make sense of Bitcoin technology. Whether we're using the CHPC to mine Bitcoins, I don't know if that's kind of appropriate because it's about ownership around these things. But the biggest miners of Bitcoin are the Chinese. 70% of Bitcoins are mined by Chinese. But you then need, they're able to do this because they have these large data processing centers, cheap electricity, because although you mine, it's not for free. You use your computing power and you use electricity. And whether we have spare capacity to mine Bitcoins in the public space, not necessarily. Whether they are private sector players who are mining Bitcoin, I'm not necessarily too sure. So on Bitcoin, yes, there is some policy decisions we need to take, and part of this is, as a country, what it is, because Bitcoin, in fact, replaces central banks, creates an alternative. I think where the more interesting part is around the blockchain technology, and there are players now that's beginning to look at blockchain technologies, including Vinny Lingham, who, in fact, is looking at blockchain technology for purposes of what is called managing citizenship. But there are other applications that we are beginning to talk to Maraca around, which is in terms of deeds registries, in terms of other applications in the agricultural sector. So just in terms of our mandate, we wouldn't necessarily get into commercialization. We would work with our institutions to build capacity to look at how this technology can be used in other instances, more at the proof of concept stage. And so we are in discussions with Maraca around where is it that we can kind of support some blockchain opportunities. The key one, though, is that all of these things are linked into a fourth industrial revolution process. In government, there is a process where three departments have been asked to begin to think about what this means from the different dimensions, regulation, opportunities, challenges, problems, etc. This work is being led by DTPS and is being done together with DTI and ourselves at this current stage. Where the DST is focusing its efforts on at the moment is trying to understand the research, development, and innovation space in relation to the fourth industrial revolution. We know that a lot of work is being done. The chair of NEC is here, but in her capacity as UP, we know there's work being done at various universities. The key next stage is we're having a workshop with the with what we call the NSI, to get a feel of what are the different fourth industrial revolution type initiatives that are happening. This is planned for the 19th. It's a DG consultation. And the idea with this is to look at whether there's a need to begin to create a more coherent framework for what we do. Because there's many efforts, but it might be that these efforts are suboptimally coordinated. And in a small country like ours, we need the kind of coordination, which is a key recurring theme. So that workshop on the 19th is going to help us think about how do we start pulling this together. There's things around high-performance computing, CHPC. Lots of people are doing things, but we haven't really pulled this together. So we'll see how we can, after that, begin to signal in our decadal plan what are the investments we want to make around this. The second question was around the business innovation survey. Yes, we've now addressed this, and the reason for the delay was that there's a lot happening in this place globally as well. You know, there's a lot of changes around methodology on the R&D survey and the business innovation survey. So we've managed to do this, and about a month ago, we had in fact gone public that we've launched the business innovation survey. I think there were some press releases around this. So the survey is now in field, and the surveys are being sent to industry, and we're hoping to complete them. And the next stage is over the next 6 to 8 months, we would go through the process of getting back the survey results and then analyzing it, et cetera. So we haven't done a business innovation survey for a while, and this one is for the last 3 to 5 years. So I'm glad to report we're on that, and hopefully this time we would get better results. On the locally developed technologies, yes, the DG has highlighted this. Cabinet approved about 4 to 6 weeks ago a proposed approach to how South Africa can have a much more conscious effort around locally developed technologies. Working with the economic cluster, we are doing, there's a 7-part process to this locally developed technologies. One is to develop a long-term strategy around locally developed technologies. But in addition to that, we're looking at 3 short-term opportunities. These are in the defense and security sector. And I'll just give a bit of why we've chosen these sectors. The second is in what we call social infrastructure, and the third is in health. And these are on the back of big public procurement processes. As an example, in health, we know that there's a big attempt to improve public health facilities, and the issue is how can we use locally developed technologies in the public health sector? So this includes pharmaceuticals, diagnostics, e-health solutions, etc. So we're busy working on an action plan around this, and part of the action plan is looking at our portfolio of publicly funded technologies that are ready. And we must say we've gotten very strong cooperation from the Department of Health and from the Chief Procurement Officer. They, for example, have given the team that's working on this year a list of all of the products that government has bought, whether it's TB diagnostics, so we then can match with the IDC where is it that we could use locally developed technologies. You need to get to that level of detail for these kinds of action plans. In the case of social infrastructure, people are aware that there's plans to develop between 50 and 100 large-scale human settlements initiatives. So the question is, can we use locally developed technologies in that instance? But I must say that the key challenge is not going to be the technologies, but there's a risk. Because if you introduce technologies that are at a stage where you don't have the ecosystem to support this, for example, maintenance and operations, you can sit with a problem. The poor will say that you are dumping technology on them. This has been the case. So we need to think very carefully around the system that supports the technology. It's not useful just to introduce a new sanitation technology, but you don't have people who can maintain this if it breaks down, and we found this with solar energy technology. So we're working with the Department of Human Settlements, with COCTA, et cetera, around these what we call catalytic human settlements project. What are the opportunities? And then the third area is defense and security, which is an obvious one for a couple of reasons. One is most countries use their locally developed technologies for defense, whether it's surveillance, etc. But we've included in this space cybersecurity. Every country has its own cybersecurity products. So we're looking at where is it that we can, for example, use this. Again, we have very strong support from partner departments. The key one is the Department of Home Affairs, who are looking at the border management strategy, and in the border management strategy, they've included a preference for locally developed technology. So now we're going into the details around biometrics, etc. So that's the 3 action plans, and then there's 2 very other important pieces of work that I want to just highlight, but we'll have further discussions around this, is the proposal to introduce 2 funding instruments to support locally developed technologies. But part of the success of these funding approaches, which we've learned from overseas, is to get the support of our procurement policy to be able to do it. So there's a system in the U.S. where you fund technologies, but once you fund technologies through this process, they get preferential access for a short period of time. so that you don't violate constitutional principles around procurement. So there's an interest in this. It's working well in other jurisdictions, and there's nothing stopping us from introducing these mechanisms to encourage the uptake. And the second one is what we call a technology acquisition and deployment fund, particularly for small-scale innovation, where the innovators don't have cash flow. So the idea is for the state to purchase it, to warehouse it, and then to look at opportunities for deploying. So you begin to create a virtuous cycle of giving preference, but you understand that it's on a risk basis, so you then build in the appropriate risk mitigation methods. And then did you just three small comments on the impact? Yes, we are doing work, but I won't talk to there is a green economy portfolio committee requested a presentation. I was trying to get more details, but we will include the climate change response as part of that green economy briefing that the portfolio committee has requested, I think, in about two weeks' time. Yeah. So that's an opportunity, DG, that you may not necessarily know of. And then finally, around the PhDs absorption, Honorable Kononov, some of this you have to do sector by sector and topic by topic. So we're beginning to look at particular areas like ICT, waste, water, biotechnology, nanotechnology, because each of these sectors display different tendencies. And if you want to absorb as many PhDs, you may have to look at it and grow some programs like the DG said, and that's what we're trying to do. Where we have a surplus and we have good capabilities and we don't have relevant research programs, we need to create the research programs to absorb the students. Like in data science is an example, there's a shortage of 25,000 data scientists that's required, and we need to work with other players like industry to create opportunities for the PhDs to be absorbed. Thanks.
Thank you, honourable members. I think at a very high level, we just want to, it's difficult to probably to break down these numbers as it is here, DG, for this particular year. But the ministerial guideline has been set that about 80% of blacks and 60% women should be supported. The analysis now show that we fairly, successful in reaching that. It's just the PhD level, and that, it's more mainly probably attributed to this chronic problem that we have in terms of the leakage in the pipeline from the honors to PhD. So the ministerial guideline says 80% of blacks and 60% women in that order. I think the numbers at the moment, who was about honors, about 59%, masters 52%, and PhDs for 45%. But as DG indicated, we could probably analyze these numbers and probably also talk to the committee members in terms of just the pipeline, in terms of the gender distribution and the race distribution in that.
That might not be, like you say, easy to provide those numbers now. But you can send it to Shanaz and then can distribute it to members. Thank you,
DG. Thank you very much, Honorable Kornhoff. It's like the DG said, we do have a long-standing relationship, Poland in SALT, and we've got very strong relations with them in our EU engagements in responding to EU relationships. They are actually not a formal partner of the SKA, and we would really welcome them, considering their impressive economic growth. We could do well. Thanks.
With just a short last one, we have been able to get some detail, Honorable King, on irregular expenditure. $150,000 was for a service provider which was blacklisted by National Treasury. There was no way the department could have known that this was the case, because at the time we didn't have this central database. So yes, we should have checked, but I think it was just the lack in the information. And then the second one was $26,000, was because of the service provider that had declared incorrect information. So by the time the on what is called the SPD forms, and the service provider was supposed to declare that he was not supposed to do business with, and didn't. So it's those things that are not necessarily things that have got something to do with us, but of course I think we're learning that we should find a way of double-checking the information that is provided, I think, to supply chain. I think, Chair, that's it. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, DG, and your team for the responses. Honorable members, is there a follow-up question? So, okay. Thank you very much. As you said, DG, we've made an undertaking also with the AG, because we really want to see the department back to the clean audit, back to green. And I think we appreciate and welcome the steps that you've taken, including the undertaking by those line management that are responsible, because the tendency is that where things go wrong and people have not done work, and it's picked up also by the AG, the blame goes to the accounting officer when there are people who are employed to do certain duties and they either were slow or didn't perform, and so also the issues of consequence management that are in place is most welcome. I'd like to thank you for the presentation, and if you want, you can stay, and then we hear the others. We will now hear from NACI. Thank you very much.
Are you looking?
Can we start, honourable members? Welcome once again, honourable members, and to the National Advisory Council on Innovation. Welcome to the chairperson and your team. We'll quickly introduce members of the committee, and you can introduce your team too. My name is Lindwe Masebo, chairperson of the committee.
Kasel Matale, committee member.
Noguzo Landongeni, committee member.
Chantal King, committee member.
Good morning, I'm Agnes Stuck, and I'm a committee member.
And I'm Nick Kornoff, committee member.
Good morning, Annelie Lotriet, member of the committee.
Thank you very much, Professor Dillery. You're from
TF. Can I introduce myself as well, chairperson?
Sorry, Honourable Paulson. I'm sorry.
Good morning, Nazir Paulson, member of the committee.
Apology once again, Prof.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the committee. It's a privilege for NACI to present to this committee this morning. I'm pleased to have with me my fellow councillors on NACI. Immediately to my left is Professor Thompson, and further to my left is Mr. O'Carroll. Also to my right, I'd like to introduce our acting head of secretariat at NACI, Dr. Mlungisi Mcele. And Honourable Chairperson, he will in fact do most of the presentation. I will just introduce it at the beginning when, of course, you are ready. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're here to hear your presentation on the annual report as part of the entity of the department, also being the advisory council. And throughout the financial year, we have been invited to several and different activities of different entities of the department. We have been impressed by what work has been done. Unfortunately, we have not been to the NACI invitation. Some of the issues, there are clashes and stuff like that, but we really appreciate that. So we are also an entity, the portfolio committee, that also have been given the responsibilities, and we do have, with resources permitting, the role of advocating for resources, more resources, where we believe that there's a need. So I think, yeah, and we've had a presentation with the AG yesterday, who was giving us the outcome, the audit outcome of the department and all its entities. So over to you, Prof.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. If I may introduce the presentation this morning, our outline would cover our mandate, our vision, our mission, some observations about the policy context and key challenges in the policy context, our strategic outcome-oriented goals, and then a report on our performance over the past reporting year. And some final words of conclusion, and then we look forward to the questions and discussion and comments by the committee. Just to introduce the presentation, Honourable Chairperson, NACI is a unique organisation in the landscape of the National Science Innovation System, in that we are the only advisory council to government, particularly advising through the Minister of Science and Technology on matters pertinent to the national system of innovation. On our first slide, I would like to start off by inviting yourself, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members of the Committee to join us at a very important event that we're hosting in the first week in December this year. We're hosting the Global Forum of Science Councils. It will be the third such meeting to be held, and we're very privileged in that we won the bid to host this event. And I think it would be an ideal opportunity for members of the Portfolio Committee, as it will for ourselves, to learn from the experiences of other science councils elsewhere in the world. Science councils are increasing across national government systems. I think South Africa, after 94, had the foresight to introduce the concept of a national system of innovation, and within that conceptual landscape, set up NACI to advise government. But the models of science councils have evolved since then, and various science councils, some of them focus on planning and priority setting. Others are exclusively advisory, and yet others also have the responsibility for coordination. With that said, I will move to the mandate of NACI, because this shapes our role within the national system of innovation. And as I said, in terms of the relevant act, we advise the Minister for Science and Technology, and through the Minister, the Minister's Committee and Cabinet, on the role and contribution of science, mathematics, innovation and technology, including indigenous technologies, in promoting and achieving national objectives. I now hand over to our very able head of NACI. He's still in an acting capacity, but may I say that over the past year, he has been critical to the implementation of our objectives. Dr. Klele.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and members of the committee. The Parliament set out a number of functions for NACI when it was established, and I wouldn't want to go through each and every function that's provided for in the presentation. Perhaps the only thing, Chair, we would like to indicate is that some of the functions that are assigned over a 20-year period of its existence, NACI has been able to meet or perform some of the functions. In some areas, we do recognize that there is some work that still needs to be done. We would like to remind the committee about our vision and mission, that we would like to become a leading advisory body to government on science, technology, and innovation matters within a well-coordinated, responsive, and functioning NSI. And on a daily basis, we think our job is to provide evidence-based or informed advice to the Minister of Science and Technology, and through her to Cabinet on STI matters, through a range of research expertise and engagement with stakeholders. Chairperson, we do, in addition to what my chairperson provided broadly in terms of the context in which we operate, we take the 2030 National Development Plan vision as part of our point of departure. In particular, there are specific areas that the NDP mentions in respect of our sector, which we think as an advisory body we can play some role. And these areas include the call for the expansion of the NSI that is coherent and well-coordinated and effective, that contributes to sustainable, diversified, and inclusive socio-economic development and the alleviation of social challenges such as poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And NACI's contribution to NDP, we think that it can do it in directly or indirectly through the provision of evidence-based or informed, responsive, and confidential advice, which sometimes are in response to the minister's request or government request, or they are based on our own initiative as council. Secondly, we think that we can contribute towards the realization of the NDP vision through conducting systemic monitoring, evaluation, and learning, and making sure that we do policy analysis and we utilize the available research expertise and make sure that all relevant stakeholders are brought together to provide us with views and inputs that we could use to enrich the advice that eventually is provided to Cabinet. The NDP chairperson also calls for the increasing size and effectiveness of the NSI, and on the slide number 11, we do make examples of the areas in which we have in the recent past done some work which we think does contribute towards this area that the NDP provides. For instance, on the effectiveness, we have published the STI indicators booklet, which provides a sense through which our system is effective or not effective. And we have developed the STI innovation scorecard, which we have piloted and shared the results. In fact, last week, Chairperson, both the indicators booklet as well as the scorecard results were presented to stakeholders at Sheraton. And we'll be presenting the similar results in Durban on Friday and on the 16th of October. We together with the HSRC, we will be hosting an event here in Cape Town to share with stakeholders the results of these booklets. We are aware, Chairperson, and we are grateful that the Portfolio Committee has extended an invitation to NECI to come and present a detailed account of the indicators booklet on the 8th of November, which we will gladly honor. And then, of course, there are other, we have conducted a performance analysis of the National System of Innovation, whose results were presented at the ministerial budget vote earlier this year. Some members of the committee participated at that luncheon. But again, Chairperson, this report is available should members need to see. And again, the NDP calls for the creation of a common overarching framework to address pressing challenges in the system. And we think that as NECI, some of our previous work that we have done, to some extent, they do contribute or provide advice on what can be done towards the realization of that objective that is set out in the NDP. And for instance, the DG had previously indicated the work around the review of the white paper, which we completed and provided the report to the minister. We were also asked to provide advice on the draft new white paper, and we made our comments to the minister and had discussions. And we think collectively that these inputs should be able to assist government in terms of developing that type of a framework. Now, again, the issues related to human resource development, Chairperson, which the NDP calls for, we are, for instance, having discussions with the National Research Foundation, the HSRC, and the Center of Excellence in Stellenbosch to explore possible interventions that we could be able to identify and provide advice on in respect of science and mathematics as areas that are giving our nation challenges with respect to matriculants' pass rate and their absorption to the university system. This slide, Chairperson, it sort of captures the policy trajectory since 1996 white paper up to where we are, which we characterize as a period of policy reflection and renewal. And NECI, of course, as I indicated, has been quite active throughout its existence, and recently we do provide inputs that we have made. And the next three slides, Chair, we have extracted information from the documents that we had provided to the minister in terms of reflecting on the progress since 1996 white paper. And in the main, our report does identify areas where we have made progress, but also it identifies areas where we need to make improvements. And this slide will show, the green sign will show areas where we have improved and areas where we have remained more or less at the same level, and in some areas where there's been a decline. And ideally, we are saying, Chairperson, the detailed report is available if the committee would like to read more. But for us, it's important to remind ourselves, to use these results to remind ourselves of the areas in which we need to think about ways in which we could be assisting the state to address some of the challenges that are facing the nation. As part of the performance analysis, we did a preliminary assessment of the 10-year innovation plan, and we do provide the results. It's really preliminary. We are of the view that perhaps next year a detailed assessment of the 10-year innovation plan might have to happen so that we get a sense of what we have been able to achieve since its development in 2008 and the areas where we can be able to improve upon. Our strategic outcome-oriented goal, Chairperson, the first one relates to our mandate, and we believe that we will continue. In the previous financial year, we sought to learn from our previous experience to improve the efficacy, the relevance, and ensure that the advice that we provided to the minister was informed, evidence-informed. Of course, it had to remain confidential. And in some instances, we try to provide a timely advice. We do, Chairperson, recognize the challenges that are related to the type of work that we have to do, that whenever you have to provide advice, you need to be mindful of the fact that you have to be able to justify why you have selected a particular area for advice. The content and the context are important to consider in order to improve at least the chance of uptake by government. The availability and the quality of data and information analysis are vitally important because they'll determine the nature of the advice that you'll eventually produce. The second goal, Chairperson, is our attempt to contribute towards building the systems monitoring, evaluation, and learning capability in order to achieve what was set out in the white paper to assess the health of the NSI and particularly its contribution towards a sustainable and inclusive development. This is a huge responsibility. We do understand that it remains work in progress. We also do understand the challenges around this work. That no matter how much good your evaluation could be, it may not necessarily at all times lead to policy improvements. We need to be mindful of that fact. We are also mindful that for us to be able to make that meaningful contribution, we need to work with different partners in the system. And this is what we have been doing in the past, working with our partners, which are mentioned in the report. But we're also aware that it's important that we develop the necessary and adequate skills and capacities to be able to undertake this assignment. And the third goal relates to our effort to build a well-coordinated, responsive, and effective NSI. Chair, of course, the concept of the NSI is important in the 1996 white paper. We are saying here that if the minister and parliament retains that concept in the new white paper, there are certain actions that we think may need to be taken, and NECI will be well positioned to play a particular role, because it's important that we continue to work towards creating a better ecosystem. And I think the previous conversation with DST and some of the questions that members honorable members posed relate to the fact that until we are able to have this ecosystem, the different parts of the system working together, some of our objectives will remain a challenge. And of course, the role of the private sector remains critical, and we know in certain areas where we need them most. Of course, this slide is a model of how a well-coordinated and functioning NSI would look like, and we do not intend to focus too much attention on that. The final goal, Chairperson, is inward-looking. It's about transforming NECI as an organization into a smart, efficient, and learning organization. And we do list a number of initiatives that we think will help us move towards the attainment of that objective. Quickly, Chair, before I provide a detailed progress on the selected highlights, we would like to acknowledge two factors which remain areas of concern on our side. Even though there's been progress in terms of our work and planning, we do think that there's still room for improvement to make sure that our annual performance plan is really well crafted, targets well set. We think there's still room to improve. The second one is around finance management, and we're working with the CFO to improve. As you would see on the finance side, that we were not able to spend the entire budget, but it's not because there were two main reasons. The first one, we actually saved. We had planned to do the STI portal utilizing external consultants. However, our DST IT colleagues were able to develop that portal. So we ended up saving the money that would have been used to pay the consultants. As a result, that money couldn't be spent. But secondly, there were delays in the foresight exercise process, which DG indicated would lead to the new decadal plan, and that led to us not being able to spend the allocated budget. But we committed ourselves to the minister, and we do commit ourselves to the committee that next year around we shouldn't be having these kind of situations where the allocated budget is not spent effectively. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to move straight to the selected highlights, starting with the performance analysis of the NSI, which we completed, shared, and submitted to the minister. I've already spoken to it earlier on. What we do urge members of the committee and the rest of the NSI community is to read this report in conjunction with the earlier review report of the white paper on science and technology that we produced in the previous financial year and submitted to Cabinet, because the two reports, they give a sense, Chairperson, of what has worked and what hasn't worked since 1996, and to some extent give an indication of the areas where as a country we need to be able to improve. The second area which we are glad, Chairperson, to report on is the development of the STI data and information portal, which we were able to launch publicly last week. And the purpose of the portal is multifold. We would like to use it to serve as a systems intelligence, to provide the systems intelligence to store data to meet the needs of various stakeholders, including policymakers. But we also want to use the portal to create an interface through which people can be able to access different data sources in the system. And we're working with different experts that are responsible for STI data in terms of enhancing the portal. We have completed phase one. We are now busy working on steps towards the phase two, the scaling up of the portal. And these are some of the institutions, Chairperson, we're working with in this regard. They include NRF, State Aid, the Reserve Bank, Council on Higher Education, and so forth. Of course, the intention of this portal is that in future it should assist South Africa to have a biannual State of Innovation report. We did, Chairperson, provide few advice to the Minister, for instance, on the government support for a venture capital fund, on issues related to sustainable use of biomass, food security, and implementation of South Africa's bioeconomy strategy. I've already mentioned the indicators booklet and the innovation scorecard. If the chairperson and members of the portfolio committee want more details on this, the council members sitting here could perhaps provide more details on some of this advice. Of course, we did indicate, Chair, that stakeholder engagement is critical to our work. We had CAPLA engagements in the previous financial year. For instance, we hosted a business symposium on R&D investment, which was attended by the minister, the DG, CEOs, and senior representatives of the private sector. The key focus of the symposium was to try and understand the declining level of R&D, of business R&D investment. That was the whole idea why we convened that business symposium, and we thought what emerged out of the symposium could be utilized by government. We also convened roundtable discussion of local experts to help us finalize the innovation scorecard. And we also had a conversation with stakeholders on the performance analysis that we produced. And that stakeholder engagement was attended by both local and international partners. And we were quite grateful, Chairperson, that we could be able to mobilize the caliber of people who participated in those events. And, of course, in drafting the indicators report, we worked with different stakeholders in the system, and DST Communications Unit played a key role. There were a few seminars that we organized at NEC, which were attended by NEC and DST staff and few members from the sector, and they were addressed by international experts, which we do provide information on. Unfortunately, Chairperson, we were not able to achieve what we had set out in our annual performance plan, that is the internal knowledge management strategy. And we do provide reasons why that was the case, but we are busy working on. And we did, because part of our legislative functions is international license, so we do give an indication, Chairperson, here, of the various engagements that we have had both in the continent as well as outside the continent, including participating in the BRICS Economic Forum. And in this regard, we do acknowledge the support that DST International Cooperation and Resources has provided us. This is, we do think that, though, that there is a lot that can be done in this regard to improve our international engagement. But at least this is the beginning of where we would like to move. As you would notice, Chair, some of the council members we had resigned for a variety of reasons, and new ones were appointed by the minister, and we do provide such information in the report. And this is the slide on the budget and expenditure. And as I indicated earlier on, that our major concern really was the fact that we could not spend the entire budget, and we did provide reasons as to why we were not able to spend the full budget. But we are having the acting CFO who can shed more light if necessary. In conclusion, Chair, we continue to strive to produce quality, relevant, and timely advice, which is essential to our mandate. Of course, it's important for us to continuously improve our performance against predetermined objectives, because This is important to avoid ESG receiving a qualified audit. We would continue to work on developing systemic analytical monitoring, evaluation, and learning capability, which is essential for the country. And, of course, our staff members remain an asset to an organization, and we'll encourage them to continuously develop themselves, and we'll provide support in that regard. And knowledge management is important to an organization such as NECI. And we'll continue to enhance our partnerships with local and international actors as they help us to produce the type of advice that we think is able to assist government to make informed decisions. Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Kela, for the presentation. Sorry. Let me open for members' questions, comments. Honorable King, Honorable Koronoff, in that order.
Thank you for the presentation. I only have one question. It came as a concern to me when I read that you guys are very much active in promoting maths and science. And I needed to find out when the Minister of Basic Education was considering lowering the pass requirement for maths. Were you consulted, as this will have a direct bearing on the actual function that you need to do and to encourage more school leavers to enter tertiary institutions in those areas?
Honorable King, Honorable Koronoff.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. I would like to have more information with, you know, on one of your slides under the heading Selected Highlights. You say government support for a venture capital fund. I just want to know a little bit more about that. And if there is a fund, or if it is in progress to have a fund, are you the correct institution to run it, or should TIA run that capital venture fund? Because, you know, we've just been to a symposium, I think, last month, and it was interesting to see that there is quite a need for a proper venture fund for innovation. And then also on the budget, I just want to know, just interesting, payment for financial assets. There was expenses and an allocated budget, but it was not used. Why was it budgeted for? For what?
Honorable Tuck.
Chairperson, I just recently now heard that they are having an acting CFO. I would like to know for how long he has been there and why. I didn't hear about it in the presentation.
Any other questions? Honorable Paulson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. At the recent innovation conference that Honorable Koronoff was referring to, what we saw there was that all innovation takes place in formal environments, or the innovation we know of. How do we reach out to those people who innovate in informal environments? How do we tell them about the role that NECI could play in taking forward their ideas, which could be a lot more than what we are aware of, because we're only aware of the formal environment. And then I have another question, is that I look at the group of you there, and glaringly honest, I tell myself, is this really, am I sitting in a post-1994 South Africa? You know, and no disrespect, but, you know, we live in a country that is totally evolved now. You know, we are now a country of 58 million people.
and we want to give access to the majority of South Africans to bring forward their ideas. And I'm saying, I mean no disrespect, but, you know, there's very, you know, I was listening to the radio this morning and they spoke about religion and they said Christianity in the West is very different from Christianity in the East. You know? So I'm saying, innovation in a post-apartheid South Africa should be viewed a lot differently from innovation, because we need to access those people who still haven't entered formal institutions, who do things in the townships, in the informal settlements that are very exciting. And I'm saying now, how do you reach out to those people, knowing that we deal with people who seem to be more comfortable in the formal innovation environments? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Paulson. I just want to find out the composition of the council where you had on slide 32. When I look at this booklet, it shows, for instance, Professor Eberhardt, that he's from 2014 to 2016. Does it mean he's still there? Because I see his name both here on your presentation and on the booklet, it's got that. But also, Advocate Luisa Zondo had resigned, according to here, but he's here, so, and Dr. Spusiso Sbis. But it does omit on this one Dr. Tulan Lamin, but he's in here. And then also Ms. Nyembezi says 2014 to 2016. Is she still there, or has she resigned, or her term ended in those? Honorable Tak, do you want to say something? Okay. Thank you, Prof.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will begin, and then I'll hand over to our acting head and my fellow councillors. Chair, we've taken note of all the questions, but let me begin with the last question, or the last issue, which is the composition of the council. The timing reflects the composition of the council as of a particular date when the reporting cycle ended. And since then, there have been changes. Some of the changes are reflected or will relate to the ex-official position of the person. So you refer to the CEO of the CSIR. So when Dr. Sibisi ended his term at the CSIR, his tenure as a NACI councillor also came to an end. And hence, the new CEO next year when we report will be reflected as a member of NACI. So quite a number of people who serve on NACI do so by virtue of their roles as chief executive officers of their organizations, like the NRF would be another example, or the Medical Research Council. The next question that will...
Sorry, Prof. Yes. It's just that you've got this. You've got them in this booklet.
Yes.
And it's and on the composition, on the presentation.
Which I... Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Yes, I know it, and I accept that. I think, as I said, I think it was the timing and the date issue. So someone like Professor Eberhard tendered his resignation and is no longer on the council, for example. And then the question was raised about the composition of NACI in relation to, I think it's representativity. I think the Honourable Member has left the room. Maybe I should come back to it, Chair, with your guidance when he's here. But let me say that the composition of NACI is firstly shaped by the applicable act. And as I pointed out, some of them are ex-officio members. Who is here today is simply based on availability and who was available today. We invited all the members. But if you look at the list of members indicated on our list in the presentation, you might notice that it is quite a diverse group in terms of gender, race, ethnicity, home language, and the like. And sometimes, as it is in South Africa, a last name and the person's ethnic membership are not entirely consistent with our stereotype. So if I could also just make that point. Also, the Honourable Member raised the issue of, are we in touch with grassroots innovation? And through the work that we do and the way we conduct the work, we endeavour to make sure that we are. And in fact, one of the issues two related issues we continuously focus on is the concept of social innovation, not looking at innovation only as a technical or economic issue, but as a means to redress and address inequality in South Africa. And that's really our overarching objective. Not innovation for innovation's sake, but innovation as a means to produce the national outcomes which we desire, and namely to close the huge inequality gaps that we currently experience. Some of the other questions I'll hand over, but one of the issues was about the acting appointments. And the Honourable Councillor, I just want to clarify, is that the acting CFO, because that's a DST staff member, or the acting CEO, which is Dr. Ele. Thanks for clarifying. When Minister Pandor appointed council, there was we had somebody acting, not Dr. Ele at that time, but somebody else. We then had a process conducted by the DST of recruitment. The first round of recruitment, we did not succeed in finding a suitable candidate. The process was then started again, and in the second round, we did identify a suitable candidate. The recommendation was, in fact, for through the Minister of Science and Technology, the recommendation is now with Cabinet, and we would hope that Cabinet will approve the recommendation very shortly. So we are expecting that to be changed by the next time we see you as a portfolio committee. Shall I hand over? There's some specifics around budget and maths and science, but perhaps on a high level, I can speak about maths and science. Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, I think there are many ways of looking at the issue around maths and science. If you look at our latest SDI in the booklet, one of the consistent challenges that we're facing as a country is that the foundation for innovation is not strong. And there are a number of initiatives over the past 20 or so years to address this. And we in NACI have been having some discussion about that, because I think the time has come for us to take an evidence-based approach. Of all the initiatives that have been implemented, many funded by private sector foundations, many funded by NGOs, which ones actually work? Now, we know from some of the evidence that it's not necessarily about maths and science per se, but it's also about, and here it's not NACI's work, but general evidence, about investment in early childhood development, the ECD sector. It's absolutely critical because we know from the research on brain development and cognitive development that years 0 to 4 is critical for later development. We also know that language development, or there's increasing evidence that language development is also critical to outcomes in mathematics and science, because it affects speed of comprehension in the teaching and learning process and so forth. So I think as NACI, as we look going forward, we could discuss with the DG and the Minister whether we can assist in providing some expertise looking at the entire landscape for maths and science development, because I think curriculum, we've gone through processes of curriculum changes. We're debating pass, mark, and all of the related matters. But which innovations actually work outside of ECD, which we know consistently is important? Increasingly in the university sector, we also researching our own graduates to see what makes the critical difference for graduating in time versus dropping out, or those who take longer to graduate than we would desire. And we have found, again, three factors: mathematics, science, and language. So often in the university system, the foundation year or year one of entering the university is critical to whether a student graduates or not. And additional work has to be done in the curriculum in order to make sure that more students graduate at the end of their study period. So we don't have a single answer as a country at this point, and I think we need a comprehensive evidence-based view. And as Nekhi, I think we would be willing to look into that, and we've made a note of it for today.
Thanks. I think, Chair, just to add that we were not consulted when DBE proposed changes. I don't think we would have been consulted, but probably the DST might have been consulted. There was a question about whether Nekhi should or TIA should run the venture capital. I think Nekhi is not in a space of running the venture, the initiatives. We don't implement. Our job is to advise on the best possible interventions that the country may need to implement. In this case, we provided advice to government on how it could provide support in a form of venture capital fund. We're still waiting for a formal response from the minister. In that sense, the advice remains confidential until the minister gives us a go-ahead to release the results. But we have had at least some articulation that at least there's some positive attitude towards the creation of that fund. But it would perhaps be TIA or any other institution that may have to implement. I would ask Andries to respond on the issue of the budget that was raised.
Okay, thanks. On the budget, I think on the goods and services, it has already been explained to say the underspending is due to the delays in the foresight and the portal that was developed internally instead of using consultants. On the compensation, I think for the whole department, our underspending on compensation, it was around only 200,000. So the impact of the budget cuts didn't affect all programs or the business units equally. In some programs, the underspending is low, in some it's high, some are even overspending. The next two items there on the financial assets, that one is just the losses that we had to write off regarding the lost assets or equipment. And then on the leave gratuities for paying employees who had left the department, like that's the payment for the leave days. Thanks.
Prof, you wanted to say something.
Myself?
I think you wanted Honorable Paulson to be here.
I'd ask that I expand a little on my answer to your question, Honorable Member. You raised the question about, well, it was a twofold question. Firstly, on the composition of NACI, and secondly, you asked, are we in touch with grassroots innovation, or do we focus almost exclusively on more formal innovation systems? The answer is no. In fact, we endeavor on a continuous basis in all the work we do to look at grassroots innovation. And we particularly are, well, we have provided advice to the minister on looking at how people who are outside of formal large organizations can access innovation capacity as it exists in many incubators across the national system of innovation. For example, youth innovation or youth entrepreneurship is an issue that we've provided advice on. And we're particularly concerned about youth innovation at this time, given that our statistics South Africa shows that there are about 4 million young people who are neither employed nor in any formal education. Okay. So youth entrepreneurship has certainly been a focus. And as my colleague has said, we did provide advice on venture capital and access to venture capital, but the minister, it's still confidential at this time. We get formal feedback from the minister whereafter we make it public. But it is an area that we're particularly concerned about because we focus on innovation not for innovation's sake, but innovation as a means to address inequality in the country. The related issue is the composition of the council. Firstly, I want to say who's here today. Firstly, I'm chairperson, and I understand it's my duty to be here. But it was simply we issued the opportunity to every member of NACI, and those who were available to come are here today. But if you look at the list, we are a diverse group, not only in race, but also in ethnic, language, and gender. But the composition is also shaped by who occupies some positions in the NSI, such as CEOs of national research-performing institutions, such as the CSIR, HSRC. So whoever is the CEO at that particular time is likely to be a member of NACI. And then finally, Chair, perhaps it's more applicable to myself, but it is the case in South Africa that we are diverse, and often our surnames shouldn't be mistaken for who we are, particularly in my case. So I have an Afrikaans surname, but I'm not Afrikaner. So.
Professor Thompson, did
you? I just wanted to raise an issue about grassroots innovation. I chair a working group on the best use of biomass, and a lot of that is coming from grassroots and very innovative.
Thank you very much. Mr. Alcaro, do you want to?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to just go back to this question of grassroots and how we can stimulate innovation. And at our last meeting when I attended here in May, one of the discussion points there was that as NACI or DST, we are one entity in South Africa. And the countries that have succeeded with a lot of innovation have tackled this on a systemic basis, looking at holistic. And one of the discussion points we had last week at the launch of the STI indicated was, how are we as a country, and this is now out of the scope of where we are as NACI, how are we as a country making sure that the teachers' training programs are adequately done in a way that young people coming through the system are open to innovation, open to entrepreneurship. So we need to look at this, and this is where maybe your portfolio committee can help this policy and this overarching or this systemic tackling of the problem, because otherwise we tend to tackle it at points in the, let's say, continuum, and we focus on matriculants, or we focus on universities, but or we focus on ECDs. But in fact, it has to be done on a sort of a continuous basis throughout the child, particularly their education. And our worry a little bit in this discussion last week is, are we paying enough attention to the training of teachers to help them give them
two editions, we, at least from NACI's point of view, and we did make sure that in our submissions with the minister on their draft new white paper, the issue of inclusion was emphasized. And inclusion in a sense that because it's more than just grassroots innovation, but we're saying that the new white paper needs to make sure that the non-R&D traditional actors are included in the policy right from the beginning, and they're not all simply seen as beneficiaries of innovation. And so we will continue to do that, as my chair and other council members indicated, to find ways in which we could be advising government on how such inclusion is to be retained. But also DST has, in the recent past, done some work around this area. There's a strategy, I think they've just finalized, on inclusive development, and they are busy developing a database of all grassroots innovators, and some of which were exhibited during the budget vote. But this is an area that we do acknowledge that as a country we have it neglected, but more should be done, because countries like Malaysia, they've done a great deal in terms of exploiting that potential of informal innovations and how we can include them in. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Honourable members, is there anyone else who wants to make comment? Okay, Prof. Delarey and your team, thank you very much for coming for the presentation, for your response to the questions and that we raised. So we hope to see you once again, and good luck for the preparation for the conference and all the good work that you're doing. Thank you very much.
Members of the committee, and
we'd
really like to host you at the event in
December. Invitations for the 5th and the 6th, to make our application to the chairperson. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Jennifer Thompson, JennifertThompson.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And this other sister,
you can tell you.
You tell me.
Okay.
I don't have your name for PMG. Can you give me your name, please, sir?
Yes, Sullivan O'Carroll. It's Sullivan, and then OCARROLL.
Thank you very much.
Sure, pleasure.
Okay. Yes, I am. Okay. Ooh, can I know that? I didn't quite catch them. What is it, the DST part? So I want your copy.
Oh, sure. Okay. You mean of this presentation?
Yeah. I want to listen to it at another time.
Oh, sure. Okay. I can send it to you. Do you know about Dropbox?
Yes.
Cool. I'll Dropbox you the
meeting. Oh, cool. Great.
Okay. What is your email address? I know it's on the thing, but anyway.
Let me write it on here for you.
Great. Thanks very much. Oh, they finish. Are they starting immediately with CSIR?
Yeah, I'll be waiting for them.
Okay. So nice and all that thing. Okay.
No. Cool.
Great.
Thanks.
So I'll send you. Okay, cool.
Hello. CSIR.
Cool.
Okay. A PMG list.
Yeah, I will fill it out.
Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah.
Are we all good?
Yeah, yeah, we're damn good. Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Tamila Bengu.
How do you do, Tamila Bengu?
I'm good, thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Okay.
Thank you for
coming.
Thank you.
How are
you?
I'm fine, thank you, sir.
I'm late from Tuku.
How do you do, I'm late from Tuku?
I'm
Vern from PMG.
PMG.
I don't know if you've heard of PMG.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, PMG does the report on parliamentary meetings.
Oh, yes.
And they put it online. You can read and see.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, sir. Okay. Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, I'll have more.